May I have your attention, please? The following is not the real Jeff Foxworthy.
If your teenage son wants nothing more than to live the life of a drone bee, you might be a beekeeper. If you do more splits than a gymnast, you might be a beekeeper. If you refer to your divorce as swarming behavior, you might be a beekeeper. I'll give you a minute to think about that one.
Welcome, welcome to Bee Love Beekeeping, presented by Man Lake. Our guests today are coming to us all the way from Florida and Argentina, as we will have David and Paulo from Vita Bee Health on the show. We will be discussing all things Varroa and Vita's new oxalic acid-based strips. Before we check in with them, we have a brief update on this year's record colony losses. Researchers from Washington State University are projecting that U.S. honeybee colony losses could be upwards of 70% this year. The last figure we heard was 62%, so this news is getting even worse. While colony losses average 40 to 50% annually, this number is a big increase. Here's a quote from their press release. This year, a combination of nutrition deficiencies, mite infestations, viral diseases, and possible pesticide exposure during the previous pollination season led to the higher losses. Sorry for the bad news, but we did promise updates as they came in. Now, to learn more about keeping our bees healthy, let's get to today's interview. I would like to welcome to the show today two very special guests coming to us, one from Florida, and that is David Westervelt, and all the way from Argentina, Paulo Miego. How are you this morning, guys?
Doing great.
Yeah, hello. Thank you. Thank you for the invitation and for the time.
You're welcome. And Paulo, I know I didn't pronounce your name perfectly. I apologize.
It was perfect.
Close enough?
No, it was perfect.
Tell us what it means.
So Miego is an Spanish surname from Extremadura, Spain. The first part of the surname, which is miel, is honey in Spanish. So yes, quite unique name for this job.
You were destined to have a job here. Now, these guys both work with Vita Bee Health, and so we're going to be talking about all things Varroa. And I know we get sick of hearing about Varroa, but I don't know about you, but I always have something to learn. These guys know the ins and outs of it and other ailments that are hurting our bees out there, and they can give us a lot of great information. David, would you first tell us a little bit about your experience in beekeeping, and then Paulo, we'll let you do the same?
Sure. That'd be great for me to tell you about beekeeping. I started beekeeping when I was about 5.5 years old. I got interested into it because a neighbor of my dad's had bees on our property, ran about 40, 50 hives of bees on our property. And my dad thought I was nuts. He's like, why are you going out in the work, play with bees? And I was in shorts and nothing else. So as I got involved in them, I went further and further. By the time I was in senior in high school, I had about 125 hives and actually wanted to become an inspector. But unbeknownst to me, I decided to go into the Army and spent 14 years in service going throughout the whole world. But during that time, I got to, you know, check on bees throughout 28 different countries and then came back to the States and went into the Florida Department of Agriculture working as a other personnel service, they call it OPS. So you're virtually nobody. And I worked through there doing research and working on then a new pest called Varroa mites and tracheal mites. And so we were testing different products. And I worked all the way up to being the chief of apiary inspection for 28 years with the Department of Ag there in Florida, retired, and Sebastian asked me if I wanted to come to work for Vida, and I was very happy. I'd known them through the Apigard, which is one of the products that we also sell, which is a thymol product, and have enjoyed every bit of retirement working with Paula, Sebastian, Max Watkins, the whole group. It's a wonderful group.
Thank you, David. And my apologies, I pronounced it Vida. So thank you. Vida. Vida Big Health. Well, you know your stuff. Go ahead, Paulo.
Okay. Well, I'm second generation of beekeepers here in Argentina. I've been working with bees since I remember. Argentina is the only country in the world that you can go to the vet school and became a bee vet. So I am a bee vet. Instead of studying all the animal during your 5 years of university, you focus only on honeybees. So that is my degree in this world. And I started giving some talk when I was very young to beekeepers as a consultant here in Argentina. And after that, I agreed to go in Mexico and other South American countries. And I end up accepting a job for a company in Argentina that tried to develop a few feed for the honeybees back in 2011. So that is when I started to work on R&D. In 2016, I received an offer from Vita Europe or Vita BeHealth. We call Vita because it's an Italian word, which means life. And they offered me the possibility of being in charge of the R&D department. And I accepted and I moved to the UK. And since then, I'm working for Vita in R&D.
But you're back in Argentina, your home.
I'm back in Argentina, yes. Yes, I'm back in Argentina now.
Before we get into all the Varroa everything, David, give us a wild and crazy beekeeping story. You said earlier you have tons of them.
I'll go back to one that happened about 45 years ago. When I was 12 years old, we decided to go to North Carolina, which we have a cabin in North Carolina. And my mom and dad and I drove up there in a Datsun pickup truck. If you can remember, you're talking in the 70s. So we drove up there and bought 35 hives of bees. At the time, the hives of bees were about $15 a piece. And that was my savings I had saved from working on bees. And so we loaded the bees up. They were all in singles. And we could fit about 17 in the back of a Datsun pickup. The problem was mom could sit in the front and my dad could sit in the front. So I got the fun of riding on the back of the truck with 17 hives of bees all the way from North Carolina down to, well, we got down to Orangeburg, South Carolina, I think it was. And we were getting a little low on fuel. So we stopped to get fuel. And where we stopped at, there was this little guy airing up his bicycle tire. And he looks over at me and says, "Mister, what are you sitting on?" And I said, "Beehives." Like, you know, nothing. The bees were, it was cool. They were inside. About that time, the inner tube on his bicycle went pow, and it sounded like a gunshot. He took off running and left his bicycle sitting there. I think he was more scared of the bees than anything else. But we also found out that day they had a bank robbery that had happened just right on the Georgia-South Carolina border, and they had traffic stop checking everybody. And we found out if you have a load of bees on the back of your Datsun and you're riding in the back of it, they let you ride on through the checkpoint, guided us right through, and told us to keep going. They figured, I guess, there wasn't any bank robber in our truck.
Wow.
We got those hives home. And I was probably the youngest North Carolina registered beekeeper. Because I got registered in order to purchase the bees, they had to be inspected. And in order to get them into Florida, they had to be inspected. So I was registered as a North Carolina beekeeper when I was 12 years old. So we did get all those bees back down to Florida.
Oof. By the way, our family had a Datsun B210.
I had one. I had a red one. So,
it was red.
Yeah. I think that's all
it did not have a heater. That was like a luxury add-on at the time.
Yep. And that was my first car that I drove, B210. Yep.
All right, back to bees. For those of us that are in cooler climates and spring is upon us now, the bees are starting to fly, is now a time that we need to be concerned about Varroa? Or have they had a nice long brood break and we can just ignore it for a while?
Yes, now is when you want to definitely do your spring checks to make sure where your mite level's at. Hit them while there's a brood break, as they're coming out of that brood break. Get your treatment started, get the mites under control, so you can have a good honey flow coming on. Your mites will start multiplying, about doubling every 6 weeks. So it's better to have a low number or a non-detectable than have them, you know, through the wintertime months. So,
what's a low number? Because I used to hear 3 or 4%. Now I'm hearing 1 or 2%. What is acceptable before I need to treat?
Yeah, we recommend below 3%. So at 3% and above, you need to treat. Anything below that, preferably non-detectable, meaning you're getting pretty much all zeros and maybe a one, is the best level. Your main problem isn't necessarily the mites, it's the viruses, a vector.
I want to hear about some of your products. I know some of them, like Apigard, Apistan, have been around for a long time. Could you maybe, Paulo, give me just a brief what the different products are? And listeners, we promise not to turn this into an infomercial, but this is good information. What they are, and then I want to talk about your new product. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So, we have Apistan in the U.S., which I'm sure it was the first product registered for Varroa control in the U.S. and many, many other countries. Was the first product that it worked very, very well for many years until the resistance to tauflubalinate arrived or occurred. And so from that moment, the product started to have some efficacy problem, not because of the product, but because of the active ingredient resistance. So Vita have been working on that matter for many years, investing a lot of money on researching how to work on the resistance to tauflubalinate. And we proved that if you do not use any tauflubalinate or flumethrin for 3 years in a row, the product start working very well again. And this has been, these studies have been for the last 20 years, proving that if you treat every 3 years with Apistan, the product works 95% or above.
Let me just take a minute here to thank our presenting sponsor, Man Lake. Whether you're a seasoned beekeeper or just getting started, Man Lake has the equipment and the expertise that you need to set your bees up for success, including my new favorite woodenware, Man Lake's wax-dipped hive kits. They are absolutely beautiful with a natural finish, and they're made to last, in fact, for up to 25 years. No painting necessary. And don't forget your discount code, MLBLOVE10. It's in the show notes for $10 off your first $100 purchase. Now, back to the guest.
So Apistan still is a very important tool for the beekeepers in the U.S. It is important that you can use this product only if you don't use it for the last 3 years, at least 2 or 3 years.
So be watching for that resistance buildup, in other words.
Yeah, exactly. The second product is what we call Apigard. In the U.S., you call it Apigard. So
well, apiary, that's why I used the long A.
Yeah. I will say many times Apigard. I'm sorry for that, but you mean Apigard.
That's okay.
So Apigard is a thymol-based product with a very unique technology, because it's a product that works by contact and by vapor. So we need bees to go and pick up the shell and remove the shell from the tray or from the dog's car, because in that way, the small or tiny thymol particle, they remain on the body of the bees, and they distribute the thymol through the colony. And in that way is how the product work, apart from the vapor. Regarding the unique formula of APGAR, because it's work by contact and by vapor, these two modes of action make Varroa very difficult to develop any resistance to the product and to the active ingredient. So this is a very important tool for the beekeeper, even more now in the US and Canada, because the last 2 or 3 years, you have the increase of the resistance to amitraz has been developed and moved through every state in the US, and having a lot of problem with this kind of product, with product based on amitraz. So APGAR is one of the best tools to help and to reduce the Varroa resistance.
Are there times when you should or shouldn't use these products based on heat, based on brood cycle?
APGAR, yes. APGAR, you cannot use when you have the superon, because the potential of no contamination of the honey, but it may transfer some odor of thymol to the honey. Never happened, yeah, but it cannot be used when you have the super on. And also, if the temperature is high, above 77 Fahrenheit, you can reduce the dose to the half. And that is allowed in the US, and that will have a similar efficacy as the full dose at lower temperature. Epistan also, you cannot use during the honey flow when you have the super on, but they have no Epistan hasn't got any temperature restriction. It works with a low or high temperature. Also, it's very cold. APGAR will not work as it should be, because it needs temperature for the vapor and for the activity inside the colony, so the bees can go and pick up the shell. That is also important. So the range of temperature for APGAR is important.
All right, but let's be realistic here. There are times that we need to treat when we do have honey supers on. What do we do then?
So we, after many years of hard work, we got the registration of Baroxan, which is an oxalic acid strip. It's a carbon, very unique type of carbon strip, which is allowed in the U.S. to be used during the honey flow with super on. So this is a very, very important tool for the beekeepers, and even more now that the summer treatment is being a very key point to arrive to the fall with the lower number of mite before the full treatment in the fall. So Baroxan is a new product that is in the U.S. market ready for the beekeepers.
Last year, a lot of us saw Randy Oliver's formula online and experimented with it. Yep. Is this similar to that, this Varroxan?
It is. It's oxalic acid. It's the efficacy is actually a little better than that. And the thing with a homemade product like Randy's, you're having to heat your product, that your solution and everything. So let's say you're in Florida, where we're at pretty much sea level. 212 is your boiling point. If you're up north, 4,000 or 5,000 feet, you may have a total different temperature. So when you're heating oxalic acid and your other products in there, you can actually change the chemical. So using a strip that is produced under a control that releases at a certain rate is a lot better, gets you a better efficacy than what you do with a homemade product. It's a lot safer.
Speaking of safer, I did Randy Oliver's recipe last year, and I wondered, is it going to be safe to now cook soup in that pan that I just made this in? You know, can I get it clean enough? Some of the strips had a lot more of the formula on them than some of the others. I don't know if that makes sense for the bees or not. So while it actually did work, I really had concerns about it too. Frankly, I'm glad to hear that there's something that's formulated safely and is just going to make sense. I think a lot of people are going to like it. So basically, Viroxan is safe because why?
Because of many things. It's safe for bees and safe for the beekeepers because it's manufactured under a GMP rules. That means that every step is controlled. And when the product leaves the factory, each strip will have the same amount of active ingredient per strip. And that is very, very important for the final dose to the colony. It always been a sentence that organic product will not develop resistance. And that is not true. That is not true at all. If you apply the same active ingredient, even if it's organic, all the time, Varroa can develop a different type of resistance, which is not chemical like for Amitraz or Tauflobalinate. Could be a behavioral resistance, different type of resistance. So applying an overdose of the same active ingredient all the time, even if it's organic active ingredient, it will develop resistance. Maybe it will take longer, but at the end, you will have problem with that active ingredient. Again, Varroxan is based on oxalic acid, which most of the honey already have oxalic acid on it. Many food that we normally eat every day, they have even more oxalic acid than a full dose of Varroxan. But it is important that we control the dose and we not overdose to avoid any risk of oxalic acid into the honey, because at the end of the day, the honey goes to the consumer. So it is important that we know which dose we are giving to the colonies. So for this reason, the Varroxan is safer for the bees and for the beekeeper. Leaving aside homemade product, that yes, when you mix oxalic acid and glycerin, and you overheat, you produce formic acid. So that is very, very dangerous for the cookers, call it that way. It's very dangerous. So yeah, this should be taken on consideration.
And David mentioned the boiling point. I happen to be at 5,700 feet elevation. So I'm not even sure what our boiling point is, but yeah, it's higher up here. But if you're at sea level, yeah, things are different. My next question is when I do an OA vaporization, I have to wear safety goggles and protective gloves and a big mask and stuff like that. What kind of safety measures do I need to take when I'm using Varroxan?
If you go through the label, still those safety guidelines are on it. Because when the product was under registration process, in order to get the product into the market, we accepted all the safety that was on the oxalic acid label. Yeah, because the oxalic acid registration and Varroxan are linked. So we accepted those safety guidelines. But to be honest, when you use an Varroxan strip, there is no vapor going out. So there is no problem or any danger breathing in the apiary. So the only thing that you need to wear is gloves, with a keeper glove or any latex glove, just to avoid the direct contact with the strip. That is the main thing that you need to wear when you are using Varroxan.
And then don't wipe your eyes with those gloves.
No. Remove it before or wash them.
Okay.
The hands, yeah.
What is the efficacy of Varroxan?
The efficacy is over 95%, is what we have on our studies. In the US, we have very good efficacy on test trial done in Washington and in California, in Missouri. We have run many studies in the US with universities, with private investigator researchers. Everything is done with the universities. But the efficacy will depend on many of different things. You can have higher efficacy or lower efficacy depending on the time of the year that you treat. Summer treatment, you may have 15 frames of brood. So the number of varroa inside the colony are really, really high. And even if the product kills 95, 94, 98% of the mite, if you started with 1,000 mites, you remain, or you finish with a slow number of mites. But if you start with 10,000 mites, even with a 95% of efficacy, when you wash your bees, at the end, you will see mites. So the efficacy will be 95, but you may need a follow-up treatment sometime. Also, if there are reinfestation, the efficacy will be affected. Where you place the strip, how you apply the product, that is really, really important. Barroxan need to be in contact with the bees all the time because you need the bees to go and chew the strip, remove the active ingredient, and distribute the active ingredient through the colony. So it is very important that when you place a strip, you place in frame with brood, if that is possible, because you will know that bees will be taking care of the brood. So you will have all the time bees walking around the strip. And so that is important because we received some questions from beekeepers that they place the strip between the boxes, like the homemade product at the tower. And in that way, the efficacy will not be the same. Yeah, the strip should be folded in half and placed between the frames in the middle of the cluster, so we know that bees are in contact all the time. On the label, it's allowed that you move the strip from one side to another side. And why is this? Because you are applying 4 strips. Folding in half are 8 strips, yeah? A half a strip. So it's a lot of strip for the bees. So some bees, they used to move away from the strip because they don't like it, because it's an acid. At the end of the day, it's an acid because it's something that is not normal for the bees. So they move away. And if they are not in contact with the bees, you don't have good efficacy. So if you go back 3-4 weeks after the application of Barroxan, and you see that the nest has moved away from the strip, you need to take the strip and place again in the middle of the bee's nest in order to ensure that the strip are in contact with the bees. So this small thing will improve the final efficacy of the product.
Makes a lot of sense. For our listeners that are in parts of the world where tropical aleps mites have also infiltrated, do these work on those mites as well?
No. There are a few old studies on thymol that work, probably formic acid, but oxalic acid in this way, no. Maybe if you make evaporate, maybe yes, but we need to test it, but I don't believe we'll have a big efficacy.
Still work to do there then.
Yeah.
David, I get asked this question a lot. Why is an alcohol wash so important versus a sugar roll test?
Your accuracy. If you do an alcohol wash and you're getting the bees that are older bees from, let's say, outside of the hive or from off of a window seal or somewhere, you know, if you're in your honey house, you will not get an accurate mite count. So you always have to take the bees from emerging brood, young bees coming up, and you'll have a more accurate mite count using 300 bees. So if you get 300 bees and you end up with 9 mites in that alcohol wash, you're at that 3% level. You can take that and really figure out if there's a mathematical equation you can look at to figure how many bees or how many mites are in your whole hive from that, and which is fairly simple to do, but that gives you your most accurate. Where powdered sugar, you'll get about probably 75% of your mites off of the bees. But since you're using such a small sample size, 300 bees, you're not getting an accurate count. So alcohol is the best. And a lot of people say, well, if you use powdered sugar, you're not killing the bees. There's been some research now that after you've shaken the bees without powdered sugar on them, they end up dying within 72 hours anyhow. So you're not doing anything else but slowly killing the bees, the 300 or 400.
How often should we be testing?
I recommend every 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks. I know some backyard beekeepers, it's hard for them to do that. But because reinfestation, it's not that your mite level builds up. You know that it's going to double every 6 weeks after springtime starts because of your brood cycle, the way the mite regenerates or their mite cycle. But what ends up happening is we have what are called mite bombs or hives that are dying away from your actual apiary. And so your bees go over for a free meal and get their leftover honey and everything, but they also bring all their mites back because that hive's slowly just, you know, dying. And so they bring all these mites back. So that's why it's good to do every 4 to 6 weeks, check your bees. And
so is it true that drones tend to drift around from different hives to different hives also?
Yes, actually, what we're finding is we used to say that, you know, worker bees didn't drift that much unless it was in a bee yard like your commercial operation where they're all in a row. But there's some new studies out of actually here in University of Florida that shows worker bees do a lot more drifting than we originally thought. What happens with workers and drones, drones are welcome pretty much all the time back to any hive. But workers, as long as they have some nectar coming in or pollen, they're accepted to any hive too. And they were doing some work at a UF here, and it's amazing that they were finding bees drifting within the yard, the apiary, but also drifting upwards of 2 miles away to other hives. What we used to think we knew, we're finding out with better research and more research that some of the books that we've got out there may have been correct at the time, but some people used to say that it was a king bee, and now we know for sure it's a queen bee. So,
how about some advice for brand new beekeepers? I think a lot of people, especially hobbyists, they think, oh, yeah, I've heard of these varroa mites, but I'm going to be treatment-free because I believe in organic everything, and I won't have those mites. My bees are healthy and they're all by themselves here. Any advice for them?
I love to talk about that because actually with Vita, we have a couple products that you can incorporate in with IPM, Integrated Pest Management. And one of them that isn't a product we sell, but having bees that are hygienic or resistant somewhat to mites, definitely. Now, for a backyard beekeeper, some of these strains of hygienic bees, or let's call them Russian bees, some of them, may not be what they're suited to manage because they're more defensive bee. But those genetics are out there. So then we also have some products that are Vita cells that are actually, they cause the bees to groom themselves and remove the mites. It's called the bee gym. And so it helps where the mites or the bees are coming in with the mites on them to remove them off. So if you're wanting to go chemical free, there's a couple different things. There's actually a couple nice papers out there that give you a huge amount of opportunities to be chemical free. But I'll tell you, after about 18 months to 2 or 3 years, you'll find out that as hard as you try to be chemical free, you're going to finally have varroa mites. So using something, you know, if you want to be more organic, which our Varroxin is organic, thymol product is a very chemical free, even though it's a thymol product, it's very easy to use. Be aware that you're going to have mites. You're going to have other pests like small hive beetles and things that are there. Knowing what's out there and educate yourself, get a good mentor, get involved at the beekeeping club. Not necessarily always go checking on the internet because some of the stuff you find on the internet isn't necessarily what you need.
Oh, come on. Half of the information there is great.
Oh, yeah.
You just don't know which half.
The half. That's right. 75% of the half is correct. Yep.
And by the way, new beekeepers, you will get varroa and varroa will kill your bees, period, unless you do something about it.
Yep. or the viruses, that are associated. You know, we're now saying there's roughly about 72 to 75 viruses that are associated with honeybees and varroa mites. And there's actually some new viruses that aren't even varroa part, meaning they're not vectored by varroa. But there's some new information coming out on some wax moth viruses that we would never think that a wax moth would harbor a virus that would be lethal to honeybees.
Guys, I appreciate your time. I think we could spend hours and hours on all of this. If people have more questions, where should they go for some guidance?
There are a few options. One of them is going to VitaBeHealth website. The other one is contacting David. David, if you can tell your phone number or email, we help.
We'll stick something in the show notes for people. Guys, is there anything else that's imperative that we talk about on this topic?
Actually, yeah, something I'd like to put out. You know, beekeepers, I get called all the time that wax moths killed my hives. And something that I like, I was just at University of Florida teaching our 18th year of bee college. And I'm the one person that I should have graduated by now, but I've been to all 18 years of them, either teaching or always in that capacity. But wax moths are a secondary pest. They're there to really destroy the old comb so a new hive can move into there. Having a good, strong, healthy hive will control wax moth.
All right, Paulo, do you have a wild and crazy beekeeping story? You've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah. So it is funny today. It wasn't at the time. So I was very young. I went to Mexico to help 400 beekeepers to convert from normal honey producer to organic honey producer in Yucatan. So I've been there working for 1 year and traveling every day to visit different communities in the middle of nowhere. So hours on a van in the middle of the Yucatan. And most of these small communities, they do not speak Spanish. They speak Maya, which is their own local language. So when I arrived there, there was always children that they help us with the translation from Spanish to the Maya. So we used to go to different apiaries and see the colony, watch the colony, and give some advice. And it was one day that there was a very, very old beekeeper, and he never only speak Maya. So we went with I don't remember exactly, but was 12-year-old nephew or something like that to the apiary. It was 2-hour walk in the middle of the jungle. At some point, we get lost in the middle of of that. And yeah, you cannot speak with the man because he doesn't speak Spanish, so only Maya. We were walking and walking and walking for different places until some point that he saw a tree and said, "Oh, I found a way back." And finally, after 8 hours of walking around the middle of Yucatan, we returned to the small village in this part of Mexico. So it was very fun after that. But at the time, it was a bit scary to spend the night in the middle of the jungle there. So yeah, that was one of the funny.
Glad you made it back.
Yeah.
Any experiences where bees treated you in some kind of way you didn't expect?
Well, in Mexico was complicated. In the south of Mexico, the bees, they were waiting for you. They heard the engine of the van arriving miles away, and you start dressing up far away, and they start arriving and giving you the welcome to Mexico. It's a chilly bees, but a really lovely place to work with bees. It's amazing. It's everything's in its version, and it's a potential. There's the honey is 100% organic because they don't too much with those bees, and they have a lot of varroa. So what happened with those bees and varroa, why they don't die, is because naturally the colony is warm and they go and they left empty the colony. And because they return every 6 or 8 weeks to that apiary, because they are far away, so they are walking only to harvest the honey, whatever honey that is there. So in that period, there was another swarm going into that hive. So it's not always the same hive. You all have new hive, and so they produce 3 to 5 kilos, which is 2.5.
It's about 8 to 11 pounds.
Yeah, with the potential of making 40, 50 kilos of honey, because they have 8, 9 months of bloom everywhere, beautiful weather. And yeah, so varroa kill the hives even now. So this is the truth.
Are there a lot of Africanized genetics? Is that why they were so hot?
Yes. Most of the south of Mexico, they have that Africanized bees, which is okay for them. It's the way that they always have bees, because they go and return. But as a commercial beekeeping, it's very hard to do it in that way.
Well, I love how you put it. They were waiting to welcome you.
Yeah.
Paulo and I both have been throughout Guatemala, Costa Rica, Guyana. I travel significantly through the Caribbean. Now, it's funny because a lot of the bees in the Caribbean act like Africanized bees, but when we've done tests on them, they're actually just Apis mellifera mellifera, or a form of the European honeybees. They're just more defensive, but throughout Costa Rica and Guyana, they're very Africanized, and yet they still manage them. They make a lot of honey on them. They do meet you when you come up to the truck. You better be suited up, and they will introduce themselves to you.
I'll take my nice friendly bees here anytime. Hey, David and Paulo, thank you so much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again for joining us here on Bee Love Beekeeping, presented by Man Lake. Another great place for more information on everything related to this podcast is in our email newsletter. You can sign up for it for free at beelovebeekeeping.com. And remember, if you're not just in it for the honey or the money, you're in it for the love. See you next week.